We're talking with Kurt Meine. He's the editor of the Library of America's Aldo Leopold, The Essential Writings of a Visionary American Environmentalist. Aldo Leopold gained much of his insight, as we said, by spending a great deal of time in the outdoors. It was both his profession and his passion. Today, it seems fewer and fewer people are spending time in nature. We're much more urban. We seem to be busier. Children spend more time in organized activities and on computers rather than playing outdoors. With people spending less and less time with nature, how can we promote a reconnection with the land?
Right. Well, this has
become
it's become a crisis, and it's gained its own new phrase. Of course, Richard Louv, our colleague, has coined the phrase "nature deficit disorder" to encapsulate what all of us have, I think, seen. When we were certainly when I was a kid, it was
you're
go out in the morning and come back before the sun, and you're okay. Educators have woken up to this, and it's not just that, again, getting kids to understand and appreciate how nature works, but it's also we're beginning to understand more and more what it means for their physical and mental health. And this is critical. We are not only need to shape a next generation that understands its connections, but for their own health and well-being and ultimately just their happiness. And any of us who've been around kids in the outdoors, we know this. And the distractions are so addictive. And we're all subject to that. It's not just kids, by the way.
Right.
We adults have to get out more, too.
Exactly.
I know I do. And so how can we do it? Well, you know, it just starts wherever you are with whomever you are. And I was just waking up this morning and think, I really need to go out and take a good walk around Woods Hole my first morning here and go see what birds are arriving and so forth. I didn't do it this morning, but tomorrow morning I think that's going to be my highest priority, even before coffee in the morning.
Oh, there you go.
So it really is. It's you know, we haven't, these new technologies are so new, we haven't adapted to them yet. That's one way to think about it. They are so new and so compelling in their power that we haven't yet quite understood what they mean in our lives, and we all wrestle with that, I think, at some level. Some people do not have that intuitive need. I think we all do, actually, but
just a matter of listening to it.
You know, all the senses get engaged. That's the beauty of this. I have a particular interest in the aural environment, you know, and especially this time of year. You can bird from bed if you want. Just open the window and see what's calling outside the window. But that sense of getting attuned, even if you're in a dense urban setting, no matter where you are, there's always something to connect to. And again, with kids, look, kids are naturally curious. Mm-hmm. They're born curious. It's we who drive that curiosity out of them.
Right. It's so true. That's so true.
And this is where Leopold's example is so strong. And again, what keeps his writing so relevant. When you read his book, A Sand County Almanac, the first part of it is not analytic. It's not philosophical. It's a series of descriptions of his place in Wisconsin. And anyone can read that and feel like you're walking alongside this very perceptive and humble observer. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing, obviously, with other great writers. And, of course, we're in Massachusetts. So, and when you read Thoreau, and not just Walden, but his journals, you get a sense of what happens when you have that daily contact. And you don't have to be a Thoreau or Leopold. Mm-hmm. It's we all enrich ourselves. Anytime you walk outside, that's the thing that happens to me. If I haven't been outside for a few days, all I have to do is walk outside, and within 10 seconds, you notice something that makes you alive again in a different way.
Well, it's almost meditative. Like, I think, you know, I'm a gardener, so I love being out there and the smell of the dirt and, you know, just sort of sitting there and listening to the birds and what have you. It's almost like a meditative thing. You just feel like you're reconnected. But you reminded me of a story. Sometimes the kids, you know, they're so connected with the you know, games and the phones and everything. It's hard to get them away from them.
Yeah.
But we take a vacation to a place where there are no cars, and it's a beach, and half the island is a nature preserve. And I remember when we brought my daughter, we said, no, do not bring any game, no technology. This is, you know, we're just going to be there on the beach. And at first she was like, this is so boring. And then she started collecting shells and then got her camera out, started taking photographs, and it completely changed her vacation. And she was, again, connecting with nature.
Yeah, there's sort of this barrier that is there. And until you bust through it.
What are we going to do? Find something.
Go out there and explore.
Find something.
And find something that reminds me of a phrase of Leopold's. And Leopold confronted this himself with his own students. And the key here is, it's not, you can't go out and say, you have to go connect with nature, so go spend it. No, that's not how it works. You have to interact with, all of us have moments in our lives when we need to connect in new ways. And so it's when you can find that narrative that you're a part of in the natural world that changes you and changes your perception. You find something meaningful that touches you. Leopold, when he was lecturing to his students, there's a line that that educators love of Leopold's. And toward the end of a lecture, he says, "I'm trying to teach you to understand the story of the land. Once you learn to read the land, you know, once you learn to understand the soils and waters and plants and animals, then I have no fear what you'll do to it, and I know many pleasant things it will do to you." That being open to the story that unfolds around us every day and we're a part of it. If you don't see yourself as a part of that story, it's not going to mean anything to you. But once you have even a simple experience where you connect, then you see that you are part of that story, and that story makes you. And it becomes something, again, at that point, then you have a relationship. And at that point, then you can say, as Leopold said, I don't fear what you'll do to it. I know a lot of things it'll do. I did this with some students recently. I was talking about water and ethics. Pretty complicated topic. I decided not to start in any rational way whatsoever. I looked at the students and I said, let's take 60 seconds. And I want you to think about a body of water that means something to you in your life. Anything, a puddle to an ocean. And we just sat there silently. Then I asked them to tell their stories. And these are undergraduate students. And one kid talked about the farm pond on their grandfather's farm. Another talked about the Ganges River and everything in between. At that point, once that relationship was established, everything else I said was just going to be detail.
Yeah.
But once you have that sense of a relationship, then all else flows from it.
Yeah, that's a great way to start that dialogue. Another famous essay written by Aldo Leopold is Thinking Like a Mountain. It describes the day he changed his mind about killing wolves. Can you tell us about that essay?
I can. It's renowned among Leopold's readers. It's a compelling piece of writing, but it took him so long to get to the point where he could write it. Early in his career, literally in the first couple months on the job with the Forest Service, he had this experience where he shot and killed a mother wolf down in Arizona. And as he describes many years later in the essay, he approached it and saw this fierce green fire dying in her eyes. And he knew, as he says at that point, that there was something new to me in those eyes, something known only to her and to the mountain. Well, that essay, that moment, lodged itself in Leopold's psyche. He didn't write about it right away. In fact, in the letter home that we uncovered in which he described this event, he hardly even makes a mention of it. 35 years later, though, 1944, and it was through the prompting of a student who was reading some of his essays, who said, you know, Aldo, you were not always doing the correct thing ecologically, that you ought to be thinking about this, and you ought to be coming forward with it. And all of us make changes in our lives, and sometimes it's hard to confront them ourselves. But this is what Leopold does in that essay. He confronts his own youthful indiscretion, as he would might say, and begins to understand more deeply what the role of wolves in ecosystems is, using modern language. But he writes about it in this compelling way, in which he understands that in that act, he was not acting with the idea of the entire community of life in his mind, but with this simple unthinking reaction. He wrote the essay in 1944. It becomes really the centerpiece of a Sand County Almanac and now widely quoted, and actually became the basis for the documentary film, too, that we completed a couple years ago called Green Fire, because it really does. It's unique. It's a special essay in that it's autobiographical, and it is a human being trying to come to terms with an important event in his life. And that's something any of us can relate to. And it also, most importantly of all, I suppose, demonstrates Leopold changing his mind.
Right. And you're talking about the film Green Fire, Aldo Leopold and a Land Ethic for Our Time. Talk a little bit about the film.
Sure. Well, Leopold, of course, was a key, and remains a key figure in the history of our thinking about environmental ideas and conservation. But there had never been a documentary film done on him until quite recently. about 5-6 years ago now, we started talking about this project with a team from the U.S. Forest Service. They have a wonderful film team that we'd worked with before. And they were eager to go about the job of creating a documentary on Leopold. And so a team of us based at the Aldo Leopold Foundation and another group I work with called the Center for Humans and Nature considered what it would take to do this project. And to make a long story short, 2 years ago, we were able to finish this film. I ended up being in the film. That was not the original idea, and I was quite resistant to it, actually. But they felt they needed someone on screen who could guide people through the places and help meet the people influenced by Leopold. And so I ended up in the film as an on-screen guide and narrator. And we've been showing it around the country and even overseas for the last 2 years. But what makes the film different, it's not a straight historical documentary. What we're really trying to show is the evolution of the idea of the land ethic in Leopold's life and how it continues to grow and evolve contemporarily now. So we do go back and explore and tell the story of Leopold's experience, but we also connect it to people working all over the country in many different types of landscapes and places, from downtown Chicago to remote wildlands out west to even a little bit on the oceans, to show how the land ethic remains a vital idea, evolving and expressing itself in many different ways in many different communities.
Now, you're a biologist by training. So tell us when you first heard of Aldo and his writings and how it shaped your work as a scientist.
Well, I was actually at that point still an English and history major when a friend of mine gave me a copy of Sand County Almanac as an undergraduate. And it did shift me. It actually kind of, and I still always will enjoy the humanities part of my own education. And I can't imagine not having that. But it really did redirect me to thinking more about how I could follow an interest in science and conservation. And so when I went on to do graduate work in Madison, Wisconsin, at the University of Wisconsin, I was going to Leopold's own place. This was where he spent the last half of his career, at the University of Wisconsin. And so I was able to actually take my humanities background and kind of hybridize it with my interest in the natural sciences, and to through Leopold's story, see how his work was still relevant to modern conservation biology and other fields of science. And so it did refocus my own direction. And the beauty of it is that I even though I don't work on Leopold all the time, he's always kind of whispering in my ear as he whispers in the ears of so many of us in conservation, helping us to understand the connections between different fields of knowledge.
We're talking with Kurt Meine. He's the editor of the Library of America's Aldo Leopold, The Essential Writings of a Visionary American Environmentalist. We'll have more after a break.